Right.
You know, that's the shit that's plaguing my spirit. I want you to do what the fuck you're supposed to do.
All right, you are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can only
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shemhotep. Good morning. Sorry about that. You're supposed to have heard this.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. I tell you, sometimes this technology is whack. You know, it really is. Sometimes it is whack. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi, Hotep family. Hope everything is well with you today. I hope you're going to have a great weekend. And I hope you're going to have the chance to do all the things you want to do, need, do, should do, must do, can, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you'll have to get it done. And I know you will, no matter where you are, no matter what the conditions, if it has to get done. Barring, of course, tornado, hurricane, earthquake, or any of that. But even in those situations, if there's something that must be done to preserve yourself and your family, I know you'll do it, and I know you'll get it done, and the ancestors will be with you. Ashe. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts, click on that, and then look, for, and you'll see it right there. Once you click on podcasts, African Perspectives, click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give it Eastern times. On Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad, followed by Let's Buy Black, 365 from 8 to 9. And then there's Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy. Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Fridays, right after this program, at 1 p.m. today, Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee. The Esoteric Review. And then Friday evening, this evening, if it's 8 p.m. and it's Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Friday. Oh, that's Time for an Awakening, y'all. That's right. A Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard tonight at 8 p.m. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., not me, Sister POC. That's right. Her program, Revive, at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m. on Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Monday through Friday. It's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. And you can get everything you need. That's right. From American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. But if you don't want to go online to purchase it, and you are in the Atlanta area, and you are near the Greenbrier Mall, then go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, and you can pick up those products that are produced by us right then and there. Also, too, go online to WeBuyBlack.com and donate. They're trying to do something that we all need to do, and that is to pull our resources together and do for ourselves. They're attempting, and I hope they are successful, like any other endeavor of trying to be collective, trying to pull monies together to get a supermarket here in Atlanta. I know you're saying, like, damn, y'all don't have a supermarket in Atlanta? All those folks? Hell, I can't even find a damn dry cleaners. I can't even find a place where I can go get some gas. Like, even in Milwaukee, Sister Diane, located on 8th and Atkinson, the last service station in the Milwaukee area. And I remember when coming up, there was many service stations, cleaners. Damn, y'all. There's still barbershops. There's still churches. Yeah. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Taimba, AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Go online to AfricanForTheAfricans.org. Give Brother Bomani a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. He has trip packages all this year, y'all. He has Senegal and Gambia. In fact, he's even added one that I just caught the other day. Senegal and Gambia, April 3rd through the 13th, $3,300. And then Ghana, trip to Ghana, May 25th to June 5th, $3,700. South Africa, November 20th through the 30th for $3,700. And then back to Ghana again, December 22nd through January 3rd for $3,700. And they added this one back in April of next year. So if you didn't get a chance to go, you can't go this year for whatever the circumstances. You have next year, Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd through the 12th of 21, and it's $3,500. Go to his website, check it out. If you want to see pictures of previous tours that just came back, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And on that website is everything that you're going to need for you to make your trip a reality. Everything you need. Dr. Renoko Rashidi, Baba Renoko, he is going to Uganda and Rwanda April 5th through the 16th of this year. Go to his website, drrunoko.com, Dr. Renoko, and look at the beautiful pictures and all kinds of other stuff that Brother Renoko has done, who is basically our man, because he has gone around the world documenting the African presence everywhere. That's like when they was digging up to find this, that, and the other, and the deeper they dug, the blacker it was. We are the first humans on this planet. Life sprung from us. Habesha Incorporated, brothers and sisters, Habesha Village, the sustainable programs that they have, Habesha Works, training brothers and sisters in urban agriculture, the sustainability program. Remember, Habesha is a pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. You should see what they're doing on the continent. They are in construction already. They ain't talking about it. They're being about it. It is a beautiful endeavor. Please, brothers and sisters, support Habesha. Invest in Habesha. Go to their website, Habesha.org. Habesha.org. And I don't have a number for brother, but I'll get a number. So that, because just in case you need a number, I can get a number for you. All right, dear brothers and sisters. Shrine of the Black Madonna. Tomorrow at the Shrine, of course, is the history program of the Shrine of the Black Madonna, the African history program of Know Thyself, every Saturday, open free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. Brother Baba Olatunji, outstanding job of providing the information. But if you can't make those Saturdays, but you can and you want the information, they have a African History Library, multimedia library. Where now it's there 7 terabytes of African Enlightenment that'll be at your disposal. 7 terabytes. It's a lot of information, y'all. Believe me, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Call the shrine. You remember, they have everything that you need. They got furniture, they got clothing, artwork, and of course they got books. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. The shrine is open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7 and on Sunday from 1 to 3. Give the shrine a call at 404-549-8676. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. If you are at the kiosk of We Buy Black, and you're right by the Medu Bookstore, and they have beautiful selections of postcards, greeting cards, and of course an array of books and T-shirts and other things, other gift packages. And so they're open Monday through Saturday from 10 to 9, and then Sunday from 12 to 6 at the Medu Bookstore. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. Black Dot, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother and friend, Kazande Ajamu. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Not just he has books, he also has the Nagash shoes, the red, black, and green shoes, as well as the shrine. So and they're starting to put the new ones out, so check it out. Okay? Nagash. Us Lifting Us, last night was their Thursday night broadcast for Us Lifting Us, Ulu, at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. And of course, to listen and to participate, to join in on the conversation of Us Lifting Us is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And of course, Us Lifting Us conference is coming up next month, 1 month away, March 13th. Through the 15th, here in Atlanta, at their Interdenominational Theological Center in Atlanta, on the campus of Morris Brown. So please join us. It's going to be a very important conference. I hope that you will be able to. And if you're coming from out of state, we have a good discount program with the Clarion, which is American African Hotel, the Clarion Hotel. Here in Atlanta on Northside Drive, right by the Pascal's, which is, of course, the famous American-African restaurant, Pascal's. And so please make your arrangements and to join us for the 7th annual Us Lifting Us membership meeting and conference here in Atlanta. Akabin Institute, where Brother Baba Barudi and Sister Ya Barudi are educating our young warriors. Please donate. They accept no money outside of our community. They're totally independent, as they should be. And we need to support that. Akabin Institute, make check or money order out to Akabin Institute and send it to P.O. Box 10786. P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use PayPal and Cash App, go to PayPal and Cash App, put in the dollar sign and put Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Barudi, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your donations consistently to Akabin Institute. Sanjay Dash, Haiti, Sanjay, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, Sister Gabby, and she consistently sends me a lot of pictures letting me know that, hey, what they're doing ain't no joke. It ain't hitting. They're doing it. They're doing the work. Sanjay Dash Haiti. That's a beautiful thing when you see like Habasha and Sanjay Dash Haiti. These programs definitely deserve to be supported. They're doing the work. It's not a theory. It is in practice. So the sister Gabby, join her. Go to her website, Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E Dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. Sanjay Dash Haiti.org. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I tell you, some of these things are gems, aren't they? The Inye Sesim
of daily revolutionary thought. February 13th. It is a tradition in African societies that when things get so terrible, the women call for war. Kali Singhin. In our tradition, women have accepted the responsibility for making the final decisions over giving life and calling for death in the extremes of dispute and disorder. They come into this responsibility because of their divine life-giving womb and their enhanced emotional temperament given them in their intimate physical and metaphysical condition in connection with the pain caused by the death of life that they work so hard to birth and nurse into power. Our men have always understood why women, why African women, would be the last to call us to war. As bringers of life, they know more intimately than anyone else what war brings and what war takes away. Of all in our community, they are always the last to call for death. Right now, sisters are calling us to war, brothers. Sisters are calling us to war. This should tell us something, for they have told us there is to be no more suffering of our children, of our ancestors, those who came and us here and now. And without contradiction, they have told us that the suffering of African people can only end through us taking to the battlefield to restore order. They're waiting for us to do more, much more than protest. They rightfully demand action now. They're calling for the deaf to begin to give new life. Do we again have to wait for the Nzingas and the Yasantawas to shame us, to dress in our armor, to forego the critical duties of womanhood, for us to stand as men and to and do the work of our women's tears have so long called for us to do? Ashe. Affirm, I listen to our mother's cries. Affirm, I listen to our mother's cries. February 14th. War for war, crime for crime, atrocity for atrocity. Jean-Jacques Dessalines. Anyone in the reparations movement who is not talking blood debts is not speaking in the interest of our ancestors. For has so many of our true warrior ancestors unequivocally stated, blood debt must be repaid in blood. This applies to all debts acquired through bloodshed, whether dated or newly acquired. Balance is restored through a return of what was taken, the return of equal value, equal sentiment, equal worth, equal pain, equal loss. Inequitable substitutions, charitable returns, which serve the interests and preserve the sanctity of the culprit's ego, can never suffice. Without the return of balance through reciprocal equivalent reparations, imbalance prevails, often disguised in the form and still victimized peace and love. Co-opted reparationists debate simply to keep our focus limited to the long lost wages of enslaved Africans, educational vouchers in a racist defunct labor market, or control over part of manufacturing industry without distribution rights. But what is the face value of 280 million slaughtered Africans? Is there any equivalent material or privilege that can compensate for genocide? How does one compensate for taken life? Only radical Negroes proclaim that this loss is beyond payment, except through deposits into their consumer accounts. For most crying about reparations, the demand of blood for blood by action will end the discussion because it involves doing whatever it does for their wronged ancestors. Affirm, I work for nothing less than an equitable return. Affirm, I work for nothing less than for an equitable return. February 15th. We can run, but we can't hide from the relentless pursuit. We must fight. We must find new ways to heighten our defense mechanisms. We must meditate, eat right, physically, mentally, spiritually, and we must draw on the energy of our ancestors, the black dot. What has been called Negroitis and the Vernon Jordan disease is a state of insanity that erases color. This is unintelligible because even cogently colorblind individuals take no pleasure in their impairment. They see no great glory in missing or dismissing an enlightening dimension of sight. No doubt, some people see colorlessness in humanity because they are truly mentally blind. Having color while trying to be colorless is the most conscious of cowardly acts. Great effort is placed on accomplishing a feat separation of the African from the Africans has the African in chronical denial of his or her revolutionary legacy, chooses to be teetering on the European to the European way. Such colorless individuals are known the world over. In some places on the continent, they are called competitors. In others, they are simply called what they endeavor to become. Negropeans, Urugupeans, white. Here in this society, we knowingly mock them as Negroettes, Oreos, Black Anglo-Saxons, Black Whites, Toms, Uncle Toms, Sellouts, and other unmentionables. Affirm, I am an African culturally joined to all Africans who are themselves. Affirm, I am an African culturally joined to all Africans who are themselves. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. This is February 14th, and of course, February 14th in the European calendar is Valentine's Day. And last night, the 8th annual Black Love Dinner and celebration was had. I've been there a few times. And Baba Wakasa and his wife, Afina, have put on this celebration for 8 years and honored some beautiful people in our community. I'm telling you, it was just fantastic, the spirit and the love. And, you know, they honor people in various categories. You know, they honor them in as ancestors, as ancestral love, revolutionary love. The ancestral love was Winnie Mandela this year, and Hume Sekela, two South African that have made a tremendous impact on African people. Revolutionary healing love, Chinyelu Aisha Lumumba. They were awarded, as well as revolutionary love. They gave that award in posthumously to another ancestor, Amon Sekou Touré. And building love honorees, brother Dr. Chiki Akua and his lovely wife, Willette, man, it's my man, Chiki Akua, of my brother. And community warrior, healer, builder, Sister Nana Nabantu. Sister Nana Nabantu, who is working with the Pan-African Federation and having our conference here in Atlanta, October 13th through the 15th here in Atlanta, to prepare for the large conference next year in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Warrior Healer Builder was also given to Brother Derek Bozeman, who is with the 1380 WALK. He's done some great things in communities in Atlanta born. I went with him to Cuba on the cruise, and that's what it was. I wish we had more time on the island of Cuba, particularly in Havana, but it was all good. Another community Warrior Healer Builder is Rashid Nuri. He is just like what Habashai is. He is a grower. He is urban gardening. He's done so many things, a dynamic brother, a beautiful brother. And so those were some of the honorees. It's a beautiful spirit talking about black love. See, today, billions of dollars will be spent. Rings bought, necklaces, dinners, chocolates. In fact, chocolates. The first to do this was Cadbury. Cadbury in the 1860s. He made the first heart-shaped chocolate. And, of course, all others followed. Nestle's, you know, all the others followed. But he was the first one to really capitalize on them, quite sure, maybe that day. Because there are some days in a particular business that they know that we gotta kick ass that day, because that is going to be the day that we're going to make, you know, a lot of money. And hopefully that day will be the day that for the year, you know, we'll yield a profit for that year. That's just like the holiday time. That's why this is a big push. And understand this, in this kind of society, in Western society, which is capitalism, these days have to come about. Even though we know that they want to make Christmas historical, they know if Jesus the Christ is historical, he wasn't born December 25th. They know that. But they keep that image up. They keep these things up. And, of course, they know there's no such thing as all these other things. But the bottom line is we are creating this particular fantasy to give it to the people for them to believe in and to celebrate and to embrace it and to spend lots of money. We always talk now in terms when they go to the holiday, the Christmas holiday or Easter or any other day, Halloween, for making money. This is capitalism. And so this holiday, a lot of money will be spent on dinners and dining and jewelry and chocolates and a number of other things. But they expressed black love last night, and everything was done within us. The venue, the food, everything, the awards, everything was done within us. So whatever amount of money that was, it was beautiful. But it wasn't just about the money. It was the recognition. It was the love shown to us. You know, it's just a beautiful thing. You know, and the people, Brother Mukasa won last year. Brother Mukasa, Sterling Brown and Zora Neale Hurston was the ancestral love. You know, some of the people in here in the Atlanta area. My good friend Damani Aquil won in 2018. Damani won for community building love. You know, everybody, and then of course ancestral love was Asa Hilliard and his lovely wife, Patsy Jo Hilliard, who was there last night. Always loved to see her, the former mayor of East Point, which is a suburb of Atlanta. She appointed a sister that I knew even when she was with the Atlanta Fire Department. And she appointed her the chief of East Point. So that sister not only became the first sister, but the first female firefighter to be the chief of a paid fire department, large paid fire department. And she had a fire. They had a dedication last year. They built a new fire station, and they named it in her honor. That's right before I left to go to Ghana. Yep. Then in 2017, Yah and Baba Moali Mumbarudi were honored for revolutionary long love. You know, like I said, this is a beautiful program. You know, that they do. And then ancestral love in 2016 when Francis passed. In fact, Marimba received the award, posthumously for Francis Cress. And I was there with Sister Marimba, Mama Marimba, and my two, my favorite couple. That's right. Baba Akima and his lovely wife, Tamu. Revolutionary love for all they do. Also, too, Baba Kashan and his lovely wife with Habasha also received building love, because you see what they're doing with Habasha. If you don't, please go to Habasha.org and check it out. And then in 2015, Molly Davis and his lovely wife, Yana. Molly Davis. And, of course, I had him on the program, Bala Boku Duduriemi and his lovely wife, Evelyn, with his book, A is for Africa, S is for Sovereignty, a children's book, very well done. And then Baba Akinyele and Mama Amantia, Umoja, long love. And she's the one that has a school. So these are people that they recognize in our community who are doing great things. Who are doing great things. Love. Black love. But how did this come about? Who is Valentine? Well, Valentine, as the story goes, and there's a lot of dispute. I mean, you know, because records this and that, so it's not really clear, but supposing he was a real person, and he lived at the time of Emperor Claudius, and Claudius said, you know, I'm trying to expand the Roman Empire here. This is the 3rd century, the 200s, and he said, I'm trying to expand this stuff, and I don't want my guys getting married, okay, because they want to be with their wives. They ain't going to be ready to go out there and fight. I want an army that's ready and down, you know. So Claudius canceled all marriages, all engagements. Nobody could get married. And so so Valentine, who was a Christian, and of course Rome was not Christian at the time. Rome became, of course, as we know, if you don't, came Christian, and the leader of the Roman Empire, and the push and the imposition of Christianity through Constantine. Constantine accepted this, and in fact, he said he had a dream when he called the Nicene Conference. They will conquer under this sign, which was the cross. And believe me, they did. But Claudius' policy, and of course, many people were upset by it, and so Valentine knew that it was wrong, so he was marrying people in secret. And so when Claudius found out about it, he imprisoned Valentine. You know, and Valentine met the jailer's daughter. She was blind, and she would bring him food and so forth. And his affection for her became real. Now, one story says that he healed her blindness. You know, I can say these are stories, y'all. And he healed her blindness. But because of what she did and how she was and the things that she said, you know, he fell in love with her. She was a beautiful young lady, you know. And so on the eve of his execution, he wrote her a letter, and he signed it, "From Your Valentine." And that expression is what is used today, "Your Valentine." And then Valentine's Day, after he was dead, many years later, because in Rome, they had this festival, like, you know, Saturnalia. Saturnalia is when they have this festival that coincides with the earth tilting away from the sun in those winter months in the northern hemisphere, the Saturnalia. And this festival, of course, Christmas was incorporated into that festival. See, one thing that the church has done, the Roman, whatever the people are doing, we will co-opt that and we will find ways to. So they're still doing it, but they now they're doing it in a quote Christian manner. Okay. So the Saturnalia, the Lupercalia was a festival dealing with fertility. You know, the spring is about to come. And so men and women, and so women would put their name in a hat. Women would. And men would pull the name off the woman, and you're supposed to be, she's supposed to be with you for whatever time that is. I don't know. But I'm quite sure there were some women like, damn, I don't want his ass. You know, I swear I hope he don't pull my name. And so the religious leader at that time, I can't remember what his name was. He didn't like this festival. He felt it was barbaric. It was wrong, you know, to make a woman be with somebody that you know she don't want to be with, you know. And so what he said, we'll have this thing called Valentine's Day, because he knew of the martyr Valentine and that particular story, you know. And so he turned it into a Christian celebration and decided to use the remembrance of the patron saint of lovers, Saint Valentine. And of course, Saint Valentine supposedly was executed February 14th. And that's how it became St. Valentine's Day. That's the succinct story. And in fact, leave it succinct, because, you know, even if you go to Wikipedia, there's so much back and forth. I don't know the real story. But, of course, that's what happened. And of course, like everything else, they build through that mythology, something that they would say that is historical, you know, that is factual. And that's how they do that. And so the Lupercalia became St. Valentine's Day. I can't remember what Roman or what Pope did it. You know, I think it's Pope Iglesias or something like that. Something like that. I'm not sure. But really, does it make a difference? And of course, everything in the Western society is in terms of, it may have started out like that and very innocent, and probably, you know, you said this is a day that you can, you know, make a proposal to somebody who you have a feeling for, and hopefully they have that same feeling for you. Or if, even someone, a female, could have even approached you. It doesn't, you know. So they have that particular day. And at the time, like I said, it was something that, you know, debauchery and drunkenness and getting women and, oh, man, all kind of, you know, getting naked and run through the streets and all kind of stuff like that. And so they said, no, we're going to civilize this. And the Pope said, we're going to end Lupercalia and we're going to have St. Valentine's Day. St. Valentine's Day. And of course, in Western society, St. Valentine's Day is huge in terms of money making, because you're appealing to the emotions, particularly of women. Because, you know, most men, myself included, can give less than a rat's ass about St. Valentine's Day, because it doesn't make a difference on the day that, far as I'm concerned, that one could show affection, that one would do something special. Whatever day that might be, it could be your birthday. It could just be the day that I think that, you know, something special should be done. We should do something special. Go wear something special. Buy something, whatever. You don't have to necessarily have a day. You know, one of my favorite books, and of course my favorite DVD, is Brother Who Was Born on the Same Day I Was. And that is Shakamusa Barashango, Dr. Barashango, in his book, Us and These European Holidays. We, as African people, should not celebrate anything European. Oh, Brother Oshie, why are you always talking about not doing? Let me tell you. the better you are divorcing yourself from whatever Europeans say, do, or suggest, the better your mind will be, the better your perspective will be, the better you'll be able to understand how important it is for us to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. Now, you and I both know that a great majority of our people are not going to do that. We know that. We know that what America and Western society has done to capture your mind, to put images and so forth in your mind to keep you chasing that. That's why I love Dr. Bobby Wright and his analogy of the bull and the bullfight. I think it's outstanding. I think it's outstanding. The bull is us. And the bullfighter, the matador, is the European. The European is dressed in all this regalia, rhinestones and all this stuff. You know, just like the facade of this, of Western society, of England, Europe, America, Australia, that makes people want it. Because understand, the bull is colorblind. The bull will charge at anything that moves or is attempting to protect itself or its territory. He'll charge at it. The cape is red, not because the bull sees red, no. It's because the audience sees the red cape. And the bullfighter stands still and he puts the cape out and he shakes it. And then the bull charges at it. And then he moves the cape. I believe they say ole or some shit, something like that. And so us charging at his cape is symbolic of us charging at his institutions of democracy, capitalism, his educational system, all these institutions that he is in control of and he manipulates, and we're charging at him, hoping to be successful in them. But what is the objective of the bullfighter, of the matador? It is to kill the bull. As the bull charges at these institutions, he's stabbing the bull. And then there is what is called the moment of truth, is when the bull finally sees the matador. But for the bull, it usually comes too late. The time too late. And the bull has been charging at those institutions, and now has he breathes his heaving bloody sides as he's been stabbed multiple times. After making innumerable charges, he finally sees the matador, but it comes too late. And we have been charging at the Europeans, trying to be in his institutions, his schools, his neighborhood, his jobs, his lifestyle, whatever. And now the bull is dead. And of course, you know what we do, what they do. They cut the bull off, even the nuts, the testicles. It's a delicacy. Just like, you know, Baba Akima, when I went to see him, he said, you know, because we're talking about next month I'm going to Tulsa, be a part of a group who will talk about in 1921 when the Tulsa massacre happened. We're going to go back to Tulsa. We're laying a groundwork going back to Tulsa next year and to talk about the massacre. And I guess, you know, I don't know. Maybe they may not accept me, but I'll be there. I'm not, well, as I told them, I ain't sugarcoating honey sugar iced tea. I ain't sugarcoating honey sugar iced tea. You know, I ain't sugarcoat nothing. And because it is very difficult. But when he said, you know, look at the mentality of somebody who would, at that time, would travel miles and miles to witness a hanging of an African man or woman or family, who would riddle his body or hers with multiple bullets, who would burn them at the stake, who would drown them, who would later cut off limbs, digits, testicles, who would make postcards, out of them and sell them. Tell you, brothers and sisters, a lot of times we just don't know. We're dealing with an evil entity. We're dealing with there is nothing we can say, nothing we can do to change the mind of the European as it relates to us. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And nothing can prove otherwise. There's no proof, because there's a plethora of evidence to prove otherwise, but they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. Yeah. Nothing. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, on the other side, we'll talk about African history, African education, Pan-African education, or African-centered education. It's important. Well, have my guest, brother. I've been trying to get Brother Akil Parker back on the program with me for some time. And so he's out of Philadelphia, an educator, African-centered educator. So we'll talk about the importance of it and how we can make more places where we educate our people. That's what's necessary and that's what's needed. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Ain't no telling where I might end. say ho. You said, say ho, ho.
Ho, ho.
Say ho.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Monday evening is Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad. And then after that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern. Wait. Let me go back. On Friday, it's Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee at 1 p.m. Immediately following this program at 1 p.m., Esoteric Review right here on Time for an Awakening. And then Friday evening at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's Revive with Sister POC once again on Sunday from 11 to 1. And then Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m., on Sunday evening. And then every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warm Valentine Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-215-490 right here on Time for an Awakening. All right, brothers and sisters, we're going to have our guest is on the line, Brother Akil Parker. Brother Akil, how are you today?
I'm doing good, brother. How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. I was talking about in the first session on Black Love. Last night I attended a fair that we have called the Celebration of Black Love, Black Love Dinner, the 8th annual, where some brothers and sisters recognize people in our community who have been together a long time and who love our community and have done some positive things to help. And they're recognizing Black love. And the beauty of it is all the money that is generated is through ourselves. The venue, the catering, the wards, all of it, recognizing how important it is to each other. Because, you know, you're going to spend a lot of money today. Well, I'm not saying you are going to spend a lot of money, but we are going to spend a lot of money today, and a lot of money, billions of dollars on today with trinkets and jewelry and dinners and chocolates. I mentioned earlier that Cadbury's chocolate, not Nestle's or Hershey's, but Cadbury's came up with the idea of giving chocolates on Valentine's Day and having a heart-shaped box. You know, and of course, everybody else followed, and you know, but that's what happens, you know, on this day. But what's been happening with you? Let's talk about African-centered school and education, how important it is, and what can we do to strengthen it and have more of them? Because I think that one of the things that is vitally clear to me, if we're going to get up out of this muck and mire that we're in, the only way we're going to do is through education. Malcolm said, education is our passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. Now, he wasn't talking about the education that we have been receiving in these public schools or even private charter or choice schools. He was talking about the right kind of education that gives right. you knowledge of self. So, yeah.
Right, not schooling, because there's plenty of schooling. And a lot of people that are in charge of these institutions that I attended as a child and as a teenager and that I've taught in the past, they're pushing schooling, but they will, I guess, co-opt or corrupt the words of Malcolm X and attempt to conflate
right.
schooling with education.
Right.
So then they're really talking about schooling, but then use the term education, and then if we're not careful, we'll think that what they're offering is what Malcolm was talking about.
Right.
And so that's why, you know, we have to, another reason that we have to really study and really read his words and really understand his words and, you know, interrogate and grapple with, you know, a lot of his speeches and a lot of his analysis and so on and so forth. But, you know, speaking in terms of Black love, I think, you know, if we really love our children, love our community, love our people, love ourselves, then we definitely have to do what you're talking about, which is develop these institutions and develop these schools and really teach our children,
mm-hmm.
you know, and show them that we love them, you know, because it's a form of protection. You know, you protect right. people that you love.
Right.
And we protect our children by providing them with knowledge and information and insight so that they'll be able to, in turn, protect themselves. Just like, you know, when it's 20 degrees outside, we love our children, so we put, you know, a heavy coat on them and a hat, scarf, some gloves maybe, so they can resist the elements.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, we have to protect them mentally. We have to prepare them mentally for what they're going to be up against as well when they just go out in the world or when they're sitting in their own house watching television or when they're on their phones, you know, looking at YouTube videos. We have to be able to provide them with a filter.
That's why,
so they can protect themselves.
Right. That's why I've always advocated a strong base of African-centered education at an early age, because mm-hmm. if you instill that and they have embraced that, so even when they go on to a high school, because they have that kind of foundation, they know what is expected of them. They know that they're going to give them what that school at high school might even be a label has one of the best high schools in the city or whatever. You know, but we know that the curriculum is geared towards Europeans. What is being stated is geared, and what is probably being taught and taught by is Europeans. But they're going to give them what they're asking for because they know already who they are. They have a solid foundation and knowledge of self. And so they're going to get the degree, the high school diploma. And then they're going to utilize that to maybe go into get an advanced degree at a university that may be us and may not be us.
Right.
But because of their preparation and because of their foundation, they can withstand. They're not there to be liked, you know.
Right.
They ain't tripping because the instructor don't like. I don't give a damn. He don't like me or she don't like me. I'm there to get everything that this school has to offer, and get that to prepare myself to help liberate my people, because that's what education should be about. I remember in National Black United Front, Brother Conrad World and many others, Brother Kofi Taharka now out of Houston is with the chairperson of the National Black United Front. But many years ago, we had one conference, and the title was Education. And in fact, it was a question: education for what?
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. I wrote an article in a local publication here in Philadelphia. You just triggered me just now. I wrote an article entitled Smart for What? And the concept of the article was, you know, a lot of us have intelligent children. We have brilliant children. We have children that go to public schools and charter schools and private schools and get excellent grades and get straight A's and have 3.0 GPAs and some 4.0 GPAs. But the question is, like, that we don't spend enough time as a community talking about is, like, what's the end game? Like, what's the purpose? Like, but we know, you and I know what the purpose is, and a lot of us know what the purpose is if we're thinking in that way and we're being analytical. It's like an unspoken code is that the goal is really just assimilation for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
With those
right.
grades, that can translate into jobs and certain opportunities in somebody else's space, to usually a white-controlled space or a European-controlled space.
Mm-hmm.
But if we keep doing that, we're essentially wasting our intelligence and wasting our ability and, you know, wasting our understanding of higher-level math and calculus and physics and chemistry and biology and literature and world languages. And it's wasted because we're not able to use it for any nation-building of our own.
Not here. And see, that's the issue. You know, looking at what Europeans have done to us, when we understood that they did not want us, they, you know, there was no more cotton to pick, no more tobacco, sugarcane, or whatever, you know, now they were automating and that kind of thing. And so we were off the farm. I hate to even use the word plantation because I'm always into words. People say words have meaning, and they do. And so that's why I'm always trying to find for us the right word, the right verbiage, because when you say a word, that puts an image into your mind. And if I say the word plantation, you know what that's going to look like, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so, you know, when we're off that, and of course we know what happened, you know, that many of our people were put into convict leasing, and which was another form of our captivity or enslavement. You know, we were jobbed out. We were put in prison, and then we were jobbed out to the railroad, jobbed out to the mines or whatever work farm that there was. And, of course, we would be entrapped in that situation because we would need certain things, and they had a commissary. And if you got things from the commissary, so now you owe. So you were entrapped in that situation, see? And so there you were consistently in that. And so what we understood was that, damn, let's build for ourselves. Let's come together and pull our resources and build Boley, Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood, Elaine, Arkansas, Allentown. But what happened? The selfish, envious, greedy European came in and vamped on those communities and destroyed them. Even in modern times, through model cities, they put a expressway through the middle of the city in the business district, destroying those communities like they did in Raleigh-Durham, in the Hittite community, you know. And so, therefore, there is not one place, Brother Akil, not one place in America that we could say we have a solely independent community that has a bank, that has educational institution, that has a hospital, you know, that has a supermarket, a grocery store. You got those four things. You can feed yourself. You can birth and or issues with health to deal with at the hospital. You know, the education of the people. And, of course, where to put the money to pull the monies together to build on that community. There's not one. There's not one community like that in America today. You know, where we could say that we control that particular community wholly. You know, I mean, there's some American African community areas, particularly because of segregation and ghettos and poverty and that kind of thing. But we're solely dependent upon the systems that the European has. We're not independent.
Yeah, I like that term that you just used. You just used the term American African.
Yeah,
I like that. It kind of ties into some things I was thinking about that I wanted to kind of talk about on the show today.
Sure.
Decentering whiteness is when, because even if you use the conventions of the English language, the first word would be the is like the second word is like the noun, and the first word is the descriptor.
Brother, brother IQ, me, great minds think alike. Go ahead, brother.
So it's like, I mean, I was introduced to this. I think it was a couple of people I've either seen wrote it or used it. Dr. Ray Winbush out of Morgan State, and also Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison, Toni Morrison. She's used that term.
Okay,
those are just two of the people that I've been exposed to that have used it, but because like with the term African American, it gives us the way we're taught the English language, it gives us the idea that foundationally and fundamentally and primarily, excuse me if I'm being redundant, but we're Americans first, and we just happen to be like at our African Africanity or Africanness is like an adjective, it's a part of our America, but we're fundamentally. American. We're fundamentally American. So that means we're part of this American project, this American experiment, right? Fundamentally, we're not African first. We're American first, and we're melanated, and our ancestors came from Africa, so that's just part of our history. As opposed to being an American African, it's like, well, you know, we're African. Like anybody melanated, you're African wherever you're from. Like Dr. Clark said, we just got dropped off at different places different boats. So we're Africans first, and, you know, we might happen to be, well, we were dropped off in America. Well, we're here in America, so we're American Africans. But then you got, like, Marcus Garvey and Amy Ashwood Garvey, we're Jamaican Africans. And then you got, like, you know, Kwame Ture, he was a Trinidadian African. And, you know, you got all these different sisters and brothers from all over the world. They were just different types of Africans in different places.
Brother Akil, you should, man, see me over here. I'm smiling from ear to ear, man. I've been pushing this. I'll continue to push this, and you continue to push it as well. We're African. Africa is the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. Black.
Right.
Black is not a noun. Black is an adjective. Black is a color. You know? Mm-hmm. We're African. And here we're American African. If we were in, it's like you said, if we were in Jamaica, we'd be Jamaican African, Nigerian African, Ghanaian African, British African, French African. We're Africans, Brazilian Africans. You understand? And if we had that mindset collectively, oh, how powerful we could be. Because number one, we would throw off the designations of the European. Because here in America has a African American. That is, to me, it means African without memory. An American without any privilege. You know? So, no, I'm not an African American. I'm an African, you know?
Yeah. So that, you know, and again, like, in terms of, like, thinking more about, like decentering whiteness, I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, I was talking to my, you know, one of my homeboys yesterday, and, you know, I teach math, and I tutor in math, and I'm always thinking of ways to connect mathematics as we know it to these type of conversations and these like cultural concepts. And in terms of like, you know, I've been thinking about how to develop this idea of how to decenter whiteness or use it or illustrate it through the use of circle geometry.
Okay.
Because if whiteness is the center of the circle, the center of the circle is one of the most important parts of the circle, because that's where any calculations you want to do in terms of measurement of the circle, you know, it deals with the radius, you know, we're dealing with area of the circle, circumference of the circle, or the length around the circle, the circumference. But the radius begins at the center and extends outward to the arcs of the circle, right? So, and also the center is responsible for the name of the circle. So the circle is named for the center of the circle. So, but if we're able to say we decenter whiteness and we put them on, at least in our perspective, put them on the fringe, put them on the circumference, put them on the perimeter, on the arcs. then, you know, we start to conceptualize them differently and start to make them less relevant. And we start to have some different conversations. And a lot of conversations don't even have to include them.
And then we start to
have some conversations that we really need to have, some more in-house conversations instead of, again, I mentioned Toni Morrison earlier, like, you know, one of her quotes where she goes into the purpose of racism. And like I like it because when I read it, it was like, it made a lot of sense because, you know, especially with, you know, the way social media is set up these days, you know, it's like racism is like a distraction. And not to say that we should totally excuse it, but we should, like, I think perhaps classify it differently, reclassify it, because it works to just distract you. Because then you feel like, well, okay, this white controlled, white owned company came out and did this racist thing, so now we have to march and we have to dedicate resources and time and energy toward addressing that, when we might have been on track to, you know, make some moves and, you know, really build some institutions. But now we're not worried about building institutions right now because you're worried about these white people over here did something disrespectful and they were being racist towards them. So now we got to go worry about them. And what happens is, like, and I think that the reason that a lot of those disrespectful behaviors on their part are able to get front and center and get the media attention that they get is because, like, they want us to be distracted, and also it keeps them centered. So mm-hmm. whether they're doing something positive or they're doing something negative, as long as they're in the center, it's kind of like with Donald Trump. It's like, even if people say, like, you know, he's this, he's that, he's this, you know, this bad guy. Now, he is a bad guy, but, you know, as long as they're talking about him, he's still the center. Like, mm-hmm. he doesn't care whether you're saying positive things about him or negative things about him.
As long as you keep talking about him. Yeah.
As long as you keep talking about him. Mm-hmm. You keep talking about him, and then he's winning. And that's how he wins. And I think at least some of our energy has to be redirected into saying, okay, just, all right, you do your thing over there. You know, we're going to be over here doing our thing, you know? And then it's like the old movie, The Blob. Like, every time you, like, you know, they would, the army and the military was out there shooting at it, it would just get stronger.
Right.
And it would grow, you know? So I think we have to, like, implement some of that. And even, like, you know, I was talking to my homeboy about, like, thinking about, like, again, going back to the mathematics connection, thinking about, like, refining my analysis on the Pythagorean theorem, right? And what I mean by that is this. So, you know, I grew up, you know, I learned about the so-called Pythagorean theorem in school and whatnot. I went to Eurocentric schools. Never went to African-centered school, really. But then I got old and I learned about, I read some work by, I heard things, but I also read some work by Théophile Obenga. You know, of course, Obenga, you know, did work with Sheikh Akhenjot many years ago. And then he wrote a book, he was talking about how Pythagoras studied in ancient Kemet. So then, you know, I became real gung-ho about that, saying, oh, well, you know, this is not the, you know, Pythagorean theorem. It shouldn't even be named after him.
Exactly. I agree.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I agree with that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, because once you look at all of those Greeks, you know, and George G.M. James pointed that out, you know, in Stolen right. Legacy. They are the biggest pledgers on the planet. Well, that's the European. He's the, you know, just like Minister Farrakhan said, I charge the white man with being the biggest murderer on earth, the biggest criminal on earth, the biggest thief on earth. Right. And that's a fact. Go ahead, brother.
And that's cool. That's cool. And I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that, but I think if I, like, again, I said I'm refining my analysis because I'm thinking that if we're looking at this from a space of, you know, us creating our own institutions, our own schools, our own educational systems, our own curriculums, then it's kind of like, you know, well, if white people want to, basically it kind of boils down to this. If white people want to lie to their children and have their children believe that Pythagoras, you know, this guy from Greece developed all this, then I kind of am at the point, I'm moving toward the point where I'm like, you know, just let them do that. As long as we tell our children the truth.
I agree.
We're telling our children the truth. But I think what happens is a lot of, like, the energy, I think it gets confusing because there's so many of our children in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have to, like, push for changes within their schools.
I think maybe that's a
private conversation. Maybe that's like, okay, when you come home from school or before you even go to school, I'm going to tell you, like, okay, when you sit in a geometry class or when you're in a math class and the subject is geometry and the teacher starts talking, he's going to talk about this guy named Pythagoras. I want you to understand You know, say this to your son, your daughter, your granddaughter, your grandchild, your niece, your nephew, whoever. I want you to understand that that's not really true. It's named after him, but that's for the purpose of European nationalism and European supremacy. That's what they're trying to center Europeans. But we know the truth of the matter is that man studied in ancient Kemet, mm-hmm. our ancestors, and learned it from us. That's just a story that they're using for their to, you know, assuage their own ego and their own, you know, egotistical needs. And, you know, so, but we know the truth, though.
And
when
see,
you go into the classroom, it's like, all right, you can call it that if you want to. But it's kind of like, you know, with us, like we code switch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use slang. Like, we know how to speak the standard English. That's their language, and we're in spaces that they control, so we have to be able to communicate a certain way. But, you know, we know how to talk among ourselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about if we should, or how to effectively apply that to even mathematics, you know, because a lot of stuff in math is just named, you know, for them. I mean, I was thinking the other day, and I'm thinking in terms of, again, Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa was not that long ago, and actually Kwanzaa really should be, the principles should be applied 365 days out of the year.
I say again,
I'm thinking
brother.
About the principle of Kuchi Chakalia.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the other day about a young brother that I taught probably my first year teaching, like in 2005. And this young brother, he's incarcerated right now. And I just was able to, I got his information from one of his homeboys that was also in my class. Got his mailing address. So I'm going to send him a letter very soon. But the thing, I'm going to do some more writing about this because I decided, so there's a method in algebra where you're solving an equation, you have a variable on both sides of the equal sign, and it's called transposing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one day in class, this young brother, his name's Hanif, this young brother said, when I was trying to describe it to the students, he said, yeah, just switch the side, change the sign. You know, this young brother from 19th Street, from South Philly, you know, a round-the-way brother, you know, but he had math skills, you know, that had been developed somewhere along the lines, probably in his middle school. And, you know, why can't I, you know, so from now, I decided the other day, not long ago, maybe a couple weeks ago, that when I describe this method from now on, I'm going to call it the Hanif method.
Right on.
Because Hanif taught me that. Hanif said that. He said in the class, he brought it out, he said, yeah, just switch the side, change the sign. And it's a device that can be used to memorize it, make it easy for people to, you know, oh, yeah, when I switch the side, I got to move the 3X over to the left side, but I can't forget to change it to a negative 3X now when I move it over. I can't mm-hmm. just move it over. I got to change the sign, too. And if it was already a negative, I got to change it to a positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be called the Hanif method, right? And we can do that, right? And Black people can do that. African people can do that. We can do that whenever we want and with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think we have to do more than that, you know. But in the textbook it'll never say that, but that's fine. I mean, well, when I write my own textbook, I'll call it that in my own textbook.
That's right.
And that's something that we could do. And I think mm-hmm. that we have to embrace that idea that we don't need permission, you know.
No.
Like we don't need permission to do anything.
No, we don't. Do we just do it? We're not asking. And just like when you mentioned that your child would go to that school. And that because your child has been infused with the knowledge of self, he or she knows, don't get into debate with Caucasian. If they're bringing it that way, let them. But you know the truth. You yeah. know the foundation of stuff, you know. And so you give back to them what they want. If they want A, the letter to A to be this, you give them that.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's hard to do when you're young. I will admit that. Like, but That's something I learned from, you know, old Dr. Bobby Wright lecture. And he said, you know, I do not think you should be in these colleges arguing with these white professors. Because your purpose here is to come in here, get the degree, and then go out into, then take, with that degree, go out into your community and help build your people up.
Exactly.
That's the goal. Your goal is not to be in here arguing with these people. Because I think even that, too, I mean, it's a lot of it is driven by ego.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of it still... It centers whiteness because you want to argue with them, like
right.
Because we want to argue with them because we give them a certain level of importance, and then we say, okay, well, I'm going to challenge you because you're that important.
Hmm. Well, it's just like the other day I had my eye exam, and somehow we're talking about you know, I'm almost 70, and he said you know, your eyes are okay, you know, corrective a little bit, and maybe a little cataract, and I mentioned Sister Dr. Patricia Bath, who I learned about 20 some years ago. She made her transition maybe a year or two ago, recently. And she developed the fecal laser probe that can get rid of cataracts, you know. And I mentioned that to him, and then he mentioned some Caucasian. And I thought to myself, you know, so I just left it at that because I said, wait a minute, you know, did he know her? Did he, you know, use her equipment? Because she developed it, and it's bona fide, it's patent, it's real, when she was at UCLA, you know.
Okay.
This is a procedure she developed, you know. But yet, the Caucasian had to have the last word. Anything you say, I can say better. Anything that you can say, I can say better. I can say anything better than you.
Right.
That's their mentality. And so, therefore, my contention is they suffer from cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. Franz Fanon said they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that who and what they are is superior to everybody else. And even though there's a mounds of evidence, plethora of evidence to prove otherwise, they ignore it. They dismiss it because it doesn't go along with their narrative. You see, it's just like the Caucasian when all the things were happening with Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown and so forth. She was holding classes for Caucasians. And her name was Dr. D'Angelo. And what she noticed that they couldn't take it. They didn't want to hear it. So she labeled it as Caucasian for, I don't use the word white, but she said it's white fragility. Their egos are fragile. They don't want to hear the evil that they have done. They want to believe that they're, you know, what they have done to the world, what they have brought to the world was good for the world. You know, their religion, their institutions, and so forth. They don't want to hear it. And you know what, Brother Akil? They sure in hell don't want to hear it from us. You know? And so she labeled it Caucasian fragility. You can look that up in Dr. D'Angelo. And so there's three things: cognitive dissonance, European or Caucasian fragility, and their hegemony. You know, hegemony, whichever word you want to use, hegemony. And so, which of course is what's mine's is mine's. And what's yours is mine's, you know? So these three things combined. So I always say, leave, you know, once you have achieved and had this knowledge of self, leave them alone. Don't debate. Don't discuss. Do our thing. If we got to go to that school to get the degree, that's what you do. You sit in that class. You take the notes. You pass the exams. You get the degree to further us as a people along. That's what the bottom line is.
And it's, you know, and again, I think we also have to have a conversation about that as well, because I think we definitely need to do that in this type of space. But we have to be very critical and very clear about how to, I guess, what is it, like vaccinate or anesthetize our youth from when they go into those spaces. Because some people, like with the intellectual tradition that is prevalent in those European spaces, those European educational or academic spaces. Like Woodson talked about this in Miseducation of the Negro.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, what did he say? Like Harvard did more harm to black men than whiskey did. Whiskey is done. Right. So how do we got to think about ways to protect our children from when, you know, so that they'll be able to just, okay, go in there, get the technical training, get the information we need. But when you come out, still be able to be of service to the group.
That's right.
And be beneficial to the group.
That's right.
A lot of us go into those spaces, and it's like the intellectual tradition. It's the epistemology. It's the curriculum. It's like you get the information, but at the same time, you get that cult. You get that culture. You receive those cultural imperatives from inside those spaces. Those Eurocentric cultural imperatives.
That's right.
Which render you worthless. Mm-hmm. So then you come out, and then you can't. You can't help it. We have a lot of brilliant, highly intelligent, highly able-bodied men and women that experience this every year, and they graduate every year, and they're coming out into the world, and they're basically useless.
Yeah, they are, and they are useless to us.
Building up our own, so we got to think about how to prevent them from being useless. How to have it so, okay, yeah, you're gonna go into that space. You're gonna go into those spaces and learn some things. And you know, other groups, I think maybe we need, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but maybe we need to study some other groups. Cause it's kind of like, you know, what Gaddafi is famous for saying, having said, he's like, you know, or we're sending you to Europe to get educated. We're not sending you to, you know, go be in between the legs of European women. You know, your job is to go get educated and come back to Libya.
Right.
Or, you know, and all, you know, groups are doing it. And a lot of us do this. A lot of us in the African community, we do this. We are able to just go.
Well, you know,
get
Dr.
the education.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Clark gave the example of the time that when Japan, when they dropped those two bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, devastating Japan. And of course, the United States and the West felt that they should do something to help Japan. And so what happened was the Japanese understood that you're going to go to America and you're going to get everything that they have to offer. And then you're going to come back and build Japan. Now, you look at many of the cities where that are predominantly us. They look like sugar, honey, iced tea. You know, but if you look at today, a modern Japan, when you look at Nagasaki, Hiroshima, or Tokyo, look how modern, because why? They came to these schools. They knew what their objective was. They taken pictures of trains and planes and other things and cars. I remember, because I'm up there in age, I remember that made in Japan when I was growing up in the 50s was junk, you know? It was what you would get what is now at the Dollar Tree, you know? But what happened? They kept refining it and refining it. And so now the best stereo equipment, the best electronic equipment, the TVs, the cars are made in Japan. They're quality, you know? Because why? They didn't buy into the European thing. They knew they were Japanese, and what they were doing was getting the information to help build Japan. We got a caller, Brother Q. Let's take this call, okay?
Okay.
All right, caller 646. Good afternoon.
Adios. What's going on into your guests? What's happening, Hotep, brother? Hey, listen. You know, the reality is this. Every nationality, basically, in this country is learning that lesson in regards to what the Japanese done. You know, if you notice, a lot of people are coming here, getting educated, and going back home, and you doing the necessary things to, just grow and develop where they come from. It's unfortunately that we're not doing it on the level that we should be, and we have the talent to do it. Do you know, excuse me, and people get mad at me when I say this, these insane Negroes that are part of the Divine Nine, a.k.a. Greek BS, they have all of the necessary skill set to go to somewhere on the continent and take over a small country and build and develop that into what the Japanese and others have done. They basically... there's not a skill set which their members probably don't have. You know what I mean? And collectively, if their minds were right and they had an understanding, they could go over there and do all of the things that they fantasize about doing here in this hellhole that they'll never be allowed to do. Because this is, like I say, the reality is most people, all the hell they ever do is go to work and come home and sit in front of the TV or listen to music or get on the internet. It ain't like most people come home after a day of work, working for the daddy and really do something seriously productive. So think about it. What if you put together a group over in Africa, gave them all of those same amenities?
Well, I think the problem, if those brothers and sisters in those sororities and fraternities and any other brother or sister who acquires knowledge and understands that what I'm doing is for the benefit of African people, I know I cannot build here. I'm in the midst. That's why I'm not down with five states anywhere. I'm not down with anything here because we're in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. We cannot build anything here. We cannot be independent here. We cannot be self-determining here. We cannot be sovereign here. And so I'm acquiring this knowledge, and I'm going to go to the continent, wherever, and I'm saying to the brothers and sisters there, these are the talents that I have. I can help teach. I can help learn. And then we can go back and get other skills and other individuals and so forth. We can send you there and you get these skills and knowledge and so forth. When we come back here, we will start to build. We need to build roads. We need to build highways. We need to build railroads, ports. We need to build hospitals, schools, villages, towns, cities, skyscrapers. We need infrastructure. We need sewage systems, water systems, energy systems in Africa. I'm tired of going to goddamn Ghana and every day or two the lights go out. That's crazy. Hell, hey, I went to
Huh? Now, with all of this that you're saying, please, when Abel Mohammed comes on Elliot's show, please call up and say exactly what you just said so that we could debunk this separation of else game that they're running. Please, continue.
When is that going to be? Is that tonight or Sunday?
No. It's going to be, I think, in maybe three weeks on this Sunday show.
Okay.
He's supposed to be on.
Okay.
Because we must fight back against this this nonsense in regards to separation. What the hell I want to separate here for? I want to go back home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Well, and just like you're saying, you said about Ghana and what the problems are going over in Ghana. The funny thing is, collectively, we can solve that problem overnight.
Yeah. All of these things can be solved overnight with the right mind, with the right intention, with the right heart. All of them. It is about the mind. Brother Akil, what do you have to say?
So, I mean, I think. So, again, so there's short-term goals and there's intermediate-term goals and long-term goals. I think definitely, like, the continent is the intermediate to – I mean, there's some short-term things that can be done in terms of the continent, but, like, learning about the continent, just learning about Africa. I mean, that's one of the things Kwame Ture said. Like, you don't have to – really, like, you know, force Africa down nobody's throat, just point them in the direction. If they actually study it on their own, then they'll, you know, develop a love for it, which will counter a lot of our schooling and a lot of our socialization, which has been meant to get us to hate it, so then we won't even want to embrace it at all, which goes back into the naming, African-American versus American-African, or versus just being African.
Right.
You know? But I think also, too, I think we got to consider... I think what we gotta consider is that I lost my train of thought. Going back to my point, I'm trying to keep this consistent theme for today of decentering whiteness.
Right.
So
right.
You know, we decentering whiteness, and that's going to enable us to, you know, develop the institutions that are needed to perhaps alter those mindsets. And you know, the brother made a comment about the divine nine, and I've seen some of that. I went to college, went to undergrad with some people that were, you know, not as committed to the uplift of our race. Because when I was an undergrad, I wasn't as committed to the uplift of our race. So I can understand where that comes from, because I understand that socialization process. But over the years, I've also come in contact with some brothers and sisters that were considered so-called Greek, that are very concerned with the uplift of the African race and our advancement. I also think that there's some brothers and sisters that have a commitment to that, but they at the same time don't have the tools and the knowledge to know, well, what can I do? But then that becomes a responsibility of those of us that do know better to kind of speak to them and say, well, this is what you can do, brother. Like, you know, okay, you're an engineer, you're an accountant, you're an architect, you're a teacher. You are, you know, you're a contractor, you are a banker. So this is how we can pull these resources and these skills and just do this type of programming, you know, and create programming. And another thing, too, like that we got to talk about is this, you know, this economic piece with, you know, we're talking about programming. And when we talk about programming, we got to think about grants and grant money. And when we think about grant money, we got to think about nonprofits. But we got to think about keep the end game in mind. We'll keep the end game in mind, because the goal for getting the grant money and, you know, starting a program, you know, in the community or for the youth, because people got to eat. People got to provide for food, clothing, and shelter for their people. But sometimes the end game is just to, you know, snuggle up and cuddle up with the white people that cut the check, right? And then we never get out of the mess.
Right.
We talked about earlier. You know, we should leverage that to say, okay, well, this is what we got to do right now. Just like we take a scholarship. If they're giving out scholarships to minorities to go to one of these HWCUs, these historically white colleges and universities, okay, take the money, but don't use the money to say, to become, but they have to be taught to think like this sometimes. People have to be taught to think like this sometimes, because a lot of the socialization in the school and in America is that, you know, it teaches us to think that we can't win anyway, so we might as well just assimilate.
Right. Well, see, that's
and
why
it's embedded within the curriculum.
Right.
Well, so we gotta be able to say, like, all right, I'm gonna take the money, but I'm basically gonna take the money and run. I'm gonna take the money, I'm gonna use it, I'm gonna get educated, I'm gonna leverage it into us to be able to go over here and do something for ourselves.
See,
that's got to be something consistent and explicit as well, that is drilled into our children from day one, letting them know. Because we got to be, you know, it's like a lot of times, like I lose patience with people that talk about pragmatism, because a lot of times their pragmatism is just an excuse to give up. It's just to basically punk out. Like, you're talking about pragmatism, okay, well, pragmatism right now, you might have to make this sacrifice and you might have to compromise right now. But hopefully 20 years from now, we're not making the same compromise and having the same conversation.
That's right.
20 years from now, 30 years from now, if our children, our grandchildren are in the same position that we're in right now, there's something ain't right. It's just like what people with you know, talking about today about, you know, blacks being, you know, very focused on economics and trying to sit at the table with white people and, you know, kind of shucking and jiving. And they use Booker T. Washington as an example. But I believe when Dr. Clark said that Booker T. Washington was a great hustler, and he was hustling these white people for their money so he could build an institution and do some other things. But I think that he did that 100 years ago so that we wouldn't have to be doing that right now. But the fact that we're doing that right now shows that we didn't learn from what he was doing, and we haven't studied what he did. We haven't studied what other people like him and that were similar to him, what they were doing. So it's like, it's not that we should be repeating that. We should be at a different level now. And hopefully 50 years from now, we won't be still having these same conversations about what we need to do, you know. But at the same time, everybody doesn't want that. We also have to accept that too. Everybody doesn't want that. And at the same time, while we accept that everybody doesn't want that goal for the future, we can accept the fact that everybody don't got to come with us. It's
That's
fine.
Right.
You know, everybody
That's
don't
right.
want to go. And we can be a critical mass and just do our thing. And, you know, we understand group dynamics. You understand, like, sociology. We understand that, like, to a certain extent, in many ways, many people do behave as sheep anyway. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to lead, and if you're doing something that's to their benefit, then they benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we live in a society where those that are in control are doing things that are very harmful. So if they're going to be led and directed and controlled without even being aware of it, they're going to get screwed over. And we're being screwed over, you know, mm-hmm. Without the awareness of being screwed over. So hopefully we can lead people in a positive direction. And we don't need to get consensus. We don't need to get, like, you know, another thing Bobby Wright said is, like, I'm not trying to, like you said this, like, back in 78, like, I'm not trying to get consensus from 40 million black people. He said, I'm trying to get consensus from 10.
Right. No, and he's right.
We can take that and run
with it. Exactly. Because we know that the multitude of our people are brain dead because of how they've been inculcated, Caucasianized. You know, Jay, you got a comment before we get out of here?
Hey, listen, you know, we just going to have to figure it out. We're going to have to do something because, unfortunately, if you're in a position where, you know, those great men have been gone for over 50 years or more, and you're still using them as the template to how you're going to move forward as an African people, something's fundamentally wrong, man. And that's what I have great issue with, is we have to figure this out right now for ourselves and move forward. Because if we don't, it's going to be like it is right now, man. Things are not getting better. Things are getting worse. And it's about to get even worse. And we're not just talking about in the context of Fredo getting back in the office or somebody else getting into the office. It's just our situation and our lack of collective energy towards moving away from this oppressor and trying to set up our own thing. And, hey, like you said, education on being what an African is key. And like I tell everybody, If you want to start someplace, just start reading the books of Mawala Geruji. And if you do that, you'll definitely be on the path, because I think he outlining every step that we need to take towards sovereignty. And
okay.
Keep up the good work, brother.
All
and
right.
ODO.
All right,
enjoy
Jay.
Enjoy the All-Star game, because I know you'll be watching it.
Okay, Jay. Enjoy the weekend, brother. Peace to you. Brother Akil, you got any last words? Because we're about to get out of here.
Yeah, last words. Just let's start with everything we do. Ask the question. With what I'm about to say, what I'm thinking, what we're about to do, does it center whiteness or does it decenter whiteness? But, you know, and again, this is something I'm thinking about. Like, I'm intellectually grappling with this, because it might be a bit of a conundrum, because if we're trying to decenter whiteness, does the conversation in itself about decentering whiteness still center whiteness?
Yeah, because you're in their environment.
So I worry about that too.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about still like getting deeper. Like I'm trying to get out of the cement. But are we digging deeper? But we got to figure out some practical ways.
Yeah.
A lot of our work and a lot of our conversations.
Oh, definitely. That's just like Brother Ariel Haron, whose book was The Sovereign Psyche, believing that even though we're in this madness, we can develop a psyche that helps us understand that we are a sovereign people. But, you know, it's tough, you know. It's really tough. I really appreciate you coming on. Of course, man, you're going to be a regular here, and I appreciate that, to talk about these educational issues and other things that you come up with. We need more young brothers and sisters like yourself who have this kind of mindset. You really caught me when you talked about it, using Africa as the noun and anything else. I mean, that's... In fact, we can talk more about words and how words affect us in the next episode of our conversation. So thanks a lot, my brother.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Oh, always. We end this program, like in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend, a safe weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodia. Bivahodia means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we shall be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Hope to see you on Monday. Peace, family.